Hello, grandkids, and welcome to a very special episode, number 800 of all crazy, crazy things. It does help to do two a week, and with that pacing, hey, we might hear Eric Nelson a whole two times a year instead of just once a year. Once every other year, I suppose. Is that what? Yeah, it's 26 weeks.
Yeah, that would be right. Yeah, I don't. It's been a long time, Kevin, since I sat in this basement with these AirPods in, recording a show with you. The last round numbered podcast or episode. So it's good to be back with you.
Yeah, I think it was the old 700, and you're like, oh yeah, I have a little more spare time, and let's just say the things have been wacky in the DeFrango household between then and now. This whole COVID thing was wacky for everyone, so, you know.
Unbelievable. That and times were simpler two kids ago, Kevin. folks, peek behind the curtain. We're recording this later in the night than we planned to because my four-year-old had a meltdown over not being able to take a toy home from her friend's house, a friend who was not offering her a toy. Parents of a friend who are not offering her a toy, the house of parents of a friend that did not have a Walmart sign out front. And so, folks, whenever you listen to this, just know that we started late because my child is a screaming, crying mess.
There are meltdowns to be had in that department. I want to say that my brother's daughter has those. They have them between each other sometimes. It's just like, yep. this seems par for the course. Like, things have not changed since my childhood, really. I only had one sister, but the screaming and gnashing of teeth seems universally consistent.
What's funny about that is I joke, and I'm kind of joking, but kind of not. Like at dinner time when our kids won't eat, I'm like, I wish this were 60 years ago when we could just say, I'm sending you to bed with no supper. I'm like, and then like that was stuff that was, they made fairy tales about that like 150 years ago.
No.
And then there were probably kids 700 years ago who didn't get to eat before bed. And that's why your life expectancy was 17. But anyway, no, you're right. It's very universal. Everyone's like, it gets better. And I'm like, is she a bully? Like, what do you mean it gets better? Like, don't use that language on me. History shows it doesn't get better.
it can go a lot of ways. It can get better. It can get downright weird sometimes. And I don't need to get into those situations that I've seen with my own eyes, but.
It'll get better when she's a doctor, lawyer, or Division I athlete. And until then, she better listen or shut her ass up and listen to what I say. When you're listening to this 18 years from now, because we archive just as well as pwtorch.com.
Oh, man. There is some stuff to be searched for on Stunt Granny's site, and every now and again I have taken a peek back at that stuff, and it's something else.
Oh boy, I don't know how some of my stuff ages well, a lot of it doesn't. I have gone from job to job trying to admit less and less that I have blogged about professional wrestling in my past, because I'm like, what an incel I used to be. Like, I hid it under this like sheath of misogyny, but I'm like, I was the loser and here I am bashing all. And then like, I don't know, that would be the worst thing somebody would find. And then they would find me making fun of Kurt Angle pull over on the side of the road, chewing pills, or whatever my role was in the Jeff Hardy situation that created this site in the first place. Like, I don't need to bring that up in a job interview.
Yeah, I mean, there are still not exactly a lot of professional wrestling fans, and I've toured more offices than I've cared to in the recent past. And yeah, not a whole lot of professional wrestling fans out there.
Yeah, darn it. But we're loyal. Well, great. Then everybody get on LinkedIn and start hiring.
Yeah, there's a reason I'm making a living doing something that's not wrestling related.
Right. Jeez.
This, yeah. God bless Wade and them for making a living out of this thing. But
do you ever think, though, like, I think about this a lot. If we knew the age-old phrase, if we knew then what we know now, like, no one was doing this. Well, Wade was. No one was doing this back in 2008.
Oh.
Like, you know, if those checks could come retroactively right now, I wouldn't need my kids to be my retirement plan.
Yeah, like we were in a good position, and because I know that I've talked to Jeremy about it, and we definitely fumbled the ball.
Yeah, well,
I mean, there are obviously a lot of circumstances, chief of which, at least on my end, was a divorce. In near bankruptcy after that,
to the best of us. Yeah,
that threw things off just a tad. And it's been a lot more. I've had more fun. Not that I have done a whole lot of logo making, but I've enjoyed being able to actually just have my own artwork up on the site rather than. I forced myself to write, and I'm not a terribly good writer.
Dude, the logo right now is fantastic. The header image on the site, when I came here the other day after you and I talked, I'm like, this is great. Like, I don't know what happened to Jeremy, but otherwise.
Oh.
No, that's good stuff. It's just my,
But yeah, we could have done something like had we all had our shit together. I mean, we still call it. It's not even called a podcast still. Like, I just refuse to let that slide.
Yeah, that's funny. That's a good point. We couldn't have possibly known what was going to happen.
Yeah, the fact that doing that for the torch and the whole. You know, the Detroit WrestleMania car ride back, like, who knew that there would be this thing called podcasting that we were doing, like, way back at that point? And it's just like, huh?
No way. Absolutely yeah. not. And here we could be talking about Blue Chew. We could be talking about Casper mattresses and Manscaped.
Oh man, yeah.
We'll leave that to Conrad.
Not that
Conrad ever listened to us back in the day or anything. Not that people couldn't call us out by name in our heyday. I still hang on to my moment of fame where apparently Todd Grisham told what was his name, James Gutman from the Torch. Todd Grisham told James Gutman to tell me to quit being such a dick about him online.
Oh man, that's even better than the whole random getting blocked and never knowing why you got blocked. Because I still believe that that Dustin Runnels, aka Goldust, has Stunt Granny blocked. And I mean, we said a lot of offensive things, so if he would have take an exception to something, I guess I'm not surprised. But it's also one of those ones where we made fun of so many people, and there were definitely some hobby horses. I don't remember him being, you know, Matt Hardy, Kurt Angle. Yep. Like, it's just like, yeah, those guys really caught a beating from us on a regular basis.
I kind of feel bad in a way. Like, these are people who would, they wouldn't know who the hell I was if I ever, like if I go to the Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, which is also a rarity these days, trust me, Dan Keister will tell you that, and so will Matt. but, you know, the rare occasion where Kurt Angle might show up, like, I'm, like, he would never pick me out of the room. He wasn't even lucid at the time when those articles were being posted. I go into places like that, I'm like, oh, son of a bitch, I'm going to get found out, I'm going to get my ass kicked in the Ramada Inn alleyway. Or, like, I went to an indie show in Des Moines, like, 6 years ago, and Bob Holly was there. And I'm like, just being close enough to Dusty Giebank saying the things that he said about Bob Holly. Like, in my head, I've got this whole story written where Bob Holly, like, finds a manifest of the people in the crowd and knows that I'm sitting third row, seat 22, and comes over and just kicks the shit out of me in front of 50 people at a Wrestling Revolver show or whatever it was. Because he thinks that, like, because he remembers that Dusty wrote nasty things about him 12 years ago. Never going to happen, but just the shit like that goes through my head.
Oh.
It kind of makes me long for the good old days.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I have it in me to be that over the top angry about something, quite honestly, at this point. So that... because,
oh,
yeah, I'm not sure if there, even when Vince McMahon was in charge, I'm not sure that there is anything to be over the top angry about. I mean, even the whole Sasha and Naomi situation was just kind of weird.
You know, that's funny you mention that one, because I think about that sometimes, and, like, you know, and... Jeremy and everybody else on the site knows, Dusty, who was on the site, knows just as well as anybody. And anybody who's listening to this now and knows me from when I was around knows I'm not watching a lot of wrestling these days. And so when I see a story like Sasha and Naomi decide to pack up and go, part of me is like, cool. I mean, go find a job somewhere else. Gainful employment at another wrestling company, or, like, everyone's job hopping these days. Like, in my head, I'm like, I've worked at three places in 2 years now. Like, that's not weird. Yeah, I didn't get what I liked and I left, and they didn't get what they liked and they left. And then sometimes I dial it all the way back, and I'm like, if these were the territory days, neither one of them would have been in the same place for a third of as long as they were, and they would have gone somewhere else. So, like, when I see a story like that now with the small amount of wrestling I watch, I'm like, all right, cool. They'll turn up again in 18 months or 3 years or whatever it is. Like, okay. Even Duke the Dumpster Drosy got out after a year and a half. Like, two people who have overstayed their welcome. They can go, they can do their thing.
Even when
I did get a chance to watch wrestling every once in a while, it's like, oh, did Sasha just break her neck again? Okay, well, I guess she'll be on TV the next time I see her, or whatever. It's like, how many grand returns can one person have? But then that's just the state of wrestling anymore, when everybody stays in the WWE for 12 straight years.
Yeah, it's really turned into a position that you can hold for quite some time, and I'm not saying I'm referring to Sasha and or Naomi with this statement, but with not the largest amounts of talents, the fact that Dana Brooke still has a job is surprising to me most of the time.
Surprised she didn't get hush money. Otherwise, like, where the hell is she? Yeah, that's a great example. Like, if this were that's funny too. Like, if this were the territory days, one of two things would happen with somebody of that stature, of that talent level, and not just her, anybody. You'd either stumble into employment every 18 months, or you'd never be employed. But the strange thing is, now that there's one major employer out there, not counting AEW, but they're still just kind of the one big golden goose out there. You can keep a job for it over a decade and nobody blinks an eye. Like, how the fuck, how many times is this going to be Dolph Ziggler's year?
Well,
fuck out of here. Sorry.
We have at least gotten past that stage, honestly.
I still, on some occasions, I still see it show up in like a, yep, I like wrestling Facebook group or whatever. I'm like, who and why? Right? Like, at least Kofi had his moment at WrestleMania, and I like him. He's fine. But, dude, some people, like, if this were the territory days, like, even Mike Rotunda went back to WCW after a while.
Yeah, there are some guys that probably could use an AEW stint, and kind of the other way around. Like, that's the best thing about AEW that hasn't really come too far into the picture, just because Cody Rhodes really is the only guy to jump from AEW to WWE. But, you know, I guess it'll be interesting when MJF's contract does end, if he's still doing well enough to cause some type of a will he leave, will he not leave kind of scenario.
He's interesting because if Vince McMahon were still in charge of WWE, I could see a moment where MJF, his contract runs out in AEW, and he ends up on it. If Vince were still in charge, he'd be on NXT for a while. I see him in like the same, like, I picture him as sort of like EC3, as somebody who's like, he's good, and he's obviously attaining success somewhere else. And if he came to the big mothership and Vince were still in charge, he'd be like, ah, little midget, little shit, put him on NXT and let Triple H take care of him. And then he'd be like, he'd be undersatisfied potentially and never see a path forward, and he would probably end up on, and then he would start his own company or whatever, I'm sure, the Control Your Destiny or whatever the hell it is, the Control Your Narrative.
Yeah. I guess that has existed. I suppose it's successful.
Is it? I'm going to Google it real quick. I'm going to see how many fans they drew to their last pay-per-view on Fight.tv. Oh, wait. Did any of that happen? Let's see. Control Your Narrative. Wrestling. What the hell? Oh, I actually have to type wrestling for it to come up. Braun Strowman. Check.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah, there's old EC3. There he is. Well, anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, he kind of had some stuff happen in Ring of Honor, but yeah, I don't feel like he's kept his name as buzzworthy as Zack Ryder is still out there and doing his thing on the independents. Like, that's been one of the few guys that's turned the independents into, he hasn't made me watch anything, but he seems to be, you know, talking all the territories into good spots.
Totally. His name pops up a lot. His character has changed just enough to be noteworthy in some way. And he's also clearly, so I don't want to say he's pandered, because this is an actual hobby of his. He relates. He resonates. That's the buzzword I wanted to find. He resonates with the, like, 40-somethings disposable income nostalgia over the action figure thing. I mean, he's sad. Like, that guy, it's like he's taking the Drew McIntyre route. Like, okay, after he got shit-canned, like, what can he do differently to stay in people's eyesight? Yeah, EC3, I feel like I always liked him. What was he? Justine Bateman? Was that his name?
Yes. Jason Bateman?
Charles Bateman? It was something Bateman, whatever.
Derek.
Derek Bateman. I always liked him, and I liked him as EC3, and I kind of feel bad for him. Here's my hot take on this. I think he's got the stink of Dixie Carter on him. Oh. Pretending to be related to her, I think, might have actually tanked him a little bit in WWE's eyes. Like, he came back and did nothing. And I'm like, he actually has something to offer, And now he's got his own company, kind of.
Yeah, and I think he went like, hey, I need to be even bigger, and, oof, man. He got to that size where, he's like, to me, he's like Brian Cage. It's just like, maybe lay off the bodybuilding part here, guys. Like, I don't feel like I say that too often. Like, hey, why don't you get to the gym tends to be, the commentary more times than not, but those guys, it's just like, oh, kind of lay off the gas. Like it felt like, especially at the end of EC3's run in WWE, he's just like, let's get as large as humanly possible. And I'm like, dude, you're still only like 6 foot tall.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
like you're not a tiny dude, but you're also, you don't have Randy Orton's frame to pack 240 or 260 pounds onto.
It's funny because if that is his mindset, like I have to get bigger to get noticed. Like, dude, the poor guy, like he came up almost at a time where everybody looked exactly the same. Like everybody was trying to look like Randy Orton, whether they did or didn't.
Oh,
and then, you know, like, and maybe even on the tail end of it, right? Like there was that stretch where everybody, like, I remember this from a shoot interview. I say I remember it, and I'm going to butcher which one it was. It was a Ring of Honor shoot interview, and CM Punk had the quote. And I can't remember if it was his shoot with Samoa Joe or his shoot with Colt Cabana, which, as we're talking about shoot interviews from 17 years ago, you can see how current I am with today's product. But Punk made the comment. He was like, you know, everybody looks the same. They're like, he said they push Chris Masters on being the masterpiece, and he's only like the fifth best looking guy on the roster. You know, so here's poor Derek Bateman. EC3 comes in at the tail end of like, okay, everybody looks exactly like this, so it's hard for him to stand out. And now he's trying to do this thing where he's super jacked up, where nobody really looks like that. Like, still, like your most like athletic and popular dudes are like in their early 40s, or they're small,
oh. Right?
Or you know, or I don't know. It's he's like 5 years too late, and then 30 years too late for the niches that he's trying to carve out for himself. And also, dude, I'm sorry, I shouldn't rag on the guy this much. He's trying to do his thing, but like, if you're gonna brand your company something, don't make yourself sound like a nerd or a whiny bitch. Like, call yourself like Championship Wrestling. Call yourself Control Your Narrative, dork.
Yeah, like it works for a hashtag, I guess. It does seem a little awkward for a wrestling organization name.
I'm not gonna chant it.
And what is it? Is it CYN then?
CYN. Would be.
Yeah, like the initials don't even do anything for you.
Like they almost spell sin. You could phonetically pronounce that as sin if you want to. But yeah. Is that what you're trying to portray when you're talking about controlling the narrative of your company and your character? Like those messages are butting heads. Messages that clearly weren't thought of until this very moment on Stunt Granny Audio, let alone workspace boardroom by EC3 and a guy who's back with the WWE. Well, that was a miss, but what can you do?
Well, I started thinking about who was back with the WWE. Oh, Strowman.
Hey, could be worse. EC3, you could have my kids screaming in your backseat.
Well, I mean, he could be worse. He could still have Strowman to worry about.
Another guy who I thought kind of endeared himself to the crowd, honestly, like, what was he doing? Was he... I'm trying to think of the first time I heard him with any sort of personality, and I feel like it was on the Talk is Jericho podcast, where he was kind of in the room at the same time as Gallows and Anderson, but I might also be making that up.
Oh, I don't. That was a while ago. That sounds at least like a time period where I was still listening to Talk Is Jericho.
I will tell you that the literal weekly amount of time that I listen to Talk Is Jericho is for Duff McKagan's joke of the week on Friday mornings. I listen to about 13 seconds of that podcast, and then I move on to actually listen to a lot of Foley's pod. So just
Oh.
more Blue Chew money in Conrad's pocket, I guess.
Fair enough. I can't say I listened to that one either, but tight schedule getting in for podcasts these days, honestly.
It's hard. It's hard because there are so many, but that doesn't mean they're all quality. I try listened. I was really desperate on an airplane for entertainment a few months ago, and I listened to Arn Anderson's podcast, which has devolved into a guy who isn't Conrad looking at a calendar of, so it's like August of 1990. August 1st, you guys were in Columbia, South Carolina, and you lost to Tom Zenk. August 2nd, you guys were in Dothan, Alabama, and you lost to Tom Zenk. Boy, you really lost a lot to Tom Zenk, didn't you? Well, and then whatever his name is. I tell you what, when you're losing to Tom Zenk, you're beating Father Time. I don't fucking know. Just get me out of here. It's like I could record an Arn Anderson podcast sitting right here on my couch. If I go to whatever the like. Let's see. If I go
Gonna
to
be
if
like
I
that
Google
guy
like.
that just does all of his interviews like he's George Lucas, except you're just gonna imitate Arn Anderson the whole time.
Exactly. If I go to prowrestling.fandom.com and I look up a list of live events from August of 1990, I could record my own Arn Anderson podcast. August 3rd, 1990. You guys were in. Trying to think of a shitty town, Macon, Georgia. My Tom Zenk was really getting one over on you. Yeah, dipshit. It's called booking. Anyway,
Oh.
yeah, there's a lot you could waste your time on out there, that's for sure.
Oof. Yeah, that does not sound like the place to use my time on.
Can I ask you something real quick? As I'm on my computer, I'm looking at my Gmail, and I get an email at 4:54 p.m. Central Time from WWE with the subject line, Katana Chance and Caden Carter and Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons set for title rematch. Is that anything that I should have been excited about? Because honestly, when I read Katana Chance and Caden Carter and Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons, I'm like, I can't tell if this is somebody fucking threw a game of Scrabble down the stairs or if it's an eye chart. What am I missing by not watching Caden Carter and Katana Chance and Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark? Anything? Anything?
Well, it just so happens that because we did start late, I did watch the main event before we started recording here, and I don't mind what NXT's become. It was kind of tough when Vince decided, hey, let's actually have prospects on the show that, is supposed to be about prospects. Instead of having 40-year-old men and women in their 30s dominate your TV screen. So there's some learning curve stuff going on. So it's one of those ones where you kind of take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. And I guess it started to develop a little bit. Caden Carter and Katana Chance, they're at their ceiling right now.
Okay,
When
so I
you're
thought.
famous for being on American Ninja Warrior, but you're also like the smallest woman on the roster.
I thought that name looked, and I'm looking at her face, I'm like, that is a little too. And then I had to Google her real quick. I'm like, oh yeah, of course, that's Casey. I couldn't pronounce her last name if you gave me 50 bucks right now,
Catanzaro,
but.
yeah.
Right, okay, thank you. Like, oh, that's who that is. Okay, so, and I could beat this drum all day too, but like, So the person that has a little bit of name value out of this group gets her name changed. Like, I get that, like, the point is to be a wrestling fan and follow wrestling so you know who the person is, right? Like, I didn't follow John Tenta's sumo career for years and get pissed when they called him Earthquake. Right? I'm like, I look at this and I'm like, who are these people? Until, like, something, like, we were 2 minutes deep into this conversation when something clicked, and I'm like, oh, that's what's her name from American Ninja Warrior. Okay. The person whose name I would have recognized had you put it in my subject line.
Well, that's kind of been an interesting one just in general with this transition from Vince to Triple H. Some people have chosen to either add back in an additional name since they got one lopped off. I'm not sure that anyone has chosen or even been given the chance to, like, downright change their full name back. Because she was Casey Catanzaro until, whatever, like 6 months ago or something in that area.
Interesting. In April 22, ring name was changed to Katana Chance. Okay, never mind. Maybe this is an improvement because I couldn't say her last name if you 75 months right now. Okay, well, that's interesting. Somewhere John Heidenreich is like, give me my first name back. Again, 16-year-old reference. Thank you. but again, that's what I get for not following. I realize that the goal is to turn people into wrestling fans and get them to know who all these people are. I still, all every once in a while, just for because I'm self-flagellating, I'll go to WWE.com and I'll go to the Superstars page, and I'll be like, there are 850 people listed here. I don't know that person. I could kick that person's ass. He looks like my next door neighbor. I can't imagine this person showing up on a television set and being a star. And about 50% of them look like they actually belong on a pro wrestling roster. This guy looks like a kid. Brooks Jensen's picture. Brooks Jensen looks like a kid from Iowa who tweeted about Bush Light and got a sponsorship accidentally. Like, this denim shirt he's wearing, and he just looks like a goof. Is he somebody? Something tells me he's somebody. Is he somebody's family?
Hold on. Which one is that? Oh,
Brooks Jensen.
He's the one with the beard, right? Yeah.
Bill Buchanan's kid. That's who he is. That's right.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, we've been doing stunt granny long enough. The guys that we were making fun of back when we started the site, their children are now professional wrestlers.
What if we started going to Raw with signs that had their names on it and said, I made fun of your dad?
Oh, that would be pretty funny.
Isn't Charlie Dempsey, isn't that... Steven Regal's kid?
I do not pay attention to such matters.
Charlie Dempsey.
Because I guess, kind of speaking in that vein, I believe her wrestling name now is Ava Rain. The Rock's daughter popped up on NXT a couple of weeks ago.
And she's in a cult. It's not Finn Balor's cult. It's the NXT version of a cult, right?
Correct.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, two cults going on, different shows. Kind of, weirdly enough, guys. Joe Gacy's cult is better put together.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, they thought that Edge could be a heel after returning from neck surgery and 9.5 years on the shelf.
Yeah, no.
Shockingly, that did not turn out well for them and him. And, you know, it was a bit of a clusterfuck start for Judgment Day, and it's still, to me, it still really hasn't found its footing at all. Because just when they finally get to beat down Gallows and Anderson and AJ Styles, of course they've got to act like scared children this week when Mia Yim evens the sides. It's just like, you're not doing these guys any favors. Like, I don't mind chicken shit heels, but if they're going to be fighting all the time, they've got to have something more than the chicken shittery in their in their repertoire.
That should be the name of our stable, the chicken shittery. If not, I'm going to get a bunch of hens and I'm going to sell eggs under the brand name Chicken Shittery. You know, I was thinking the other day, somebody somewhere had to be the first person to eat an egg. Like somebody was watching from across the field and they saw this hen and they said, I don't know what that oval shaped thing is that just fell out of her ass, but I got to get what's inside of there.
Yeah, that's that way for a lot of things.
Who decided to slurp the first oyster empty? Give me a break.
Yeah. It'd murder me now, but it was pretty tasty when I was physically able to eat that.
Oh my gosh, I'm still scrolling the roster page. LA Knight looks like a contestant on The Bachelor.
Oh man, he could really make it on The Bachelor, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least Bachelor in Paradise. Jeremy was so disappointed when I told him I watched that trash with my with the wife.
Dude, can you believe Eliza, what she is doing to Rodney right now?
That was pretty offensive, honestly. It was not a good look for that that woman.
No. The fact that, I know you can do anything with editing, but the fact that she's making out with Justin 5 minutes after she's like, oh, Rodney, oh, I appreciate everything you do for me. And then it makes it look like Rodney can see them making out and then he gets all mad. But like the next day, he's like, oh, this is going to be great. And here she is sobbing in bed. Like, dude, you can't tell me that you don't see her avoiding you and everybody else because of her just basket case inability to make a decent decision in life. Like, poor Rodney. I hope he finds true love. This has been Bachelor in Paradise, episode number 800. Tune in next week when we dissect.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those
giant bitch. and Logan is the least attractive person that every woman on earth is in love with all of a sudden.
That is a great mystery that I'm like, man, would I have killed on this show? Like, is that the way this works? Just be unattractive and pop on Bachelor in Paradise and every woman will fawn over you? It's
like
solid plan.
Everybody look up Logan Bachelor in Paradise and see this guy because he's like the AI version of like they got the old mid-90s butt cut hairdo. They got the current-ish day stubble. They got the, like, dude, where's my car era mouth-breathing slack jaw, like, California thing going on. But it's like AI managed to fuck it up a little bit. And yet everybody on these shows is fawning all over him. And he's a dipshit. And then you got Kate, who's 7 years older than he is, who is, like, giving him all the confidence in the world and then whispering to everybody else, like, he's a boy. He can't meet my needs. He doesn't make six figures. And then picks him anyway. Bachelor in Paradise 800 is brought to you by Blue Chew.
Yeah, there are so many of the women on that show that in no way would I want to deal with them in any facet of my life.
No, definitely. Well, good. I'm glad that I'm not alone in watching this show. We were over at some friends' house earlier, and somehow it came up that I watch it with Carly, and the wife of the other couple was like, see? To her husband, see? Like, don't use me as an example. I'm the weirdo. I spent I spent too much of my life looking like the number 800 that, like, I'll do anything to stay in a solid relationship. I'll watch The Bachelorette in Paradise every week if it keeps things status quo.
I suppose I'm not doing out of fear, but it's one of those few things that I guess I do occasionally like the good train wreck. I can't handle that that type of TV all the time. But just dipping your toe in for these shenanigans, I'm like, yeah, I can do this for, you know, like 2 months and then I'm out. Like, no more reality TV for me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's the perfect length of a season of our favorite show, Bachelor in Paradise, only on ABC.
Oh, and just the fact that the bartender of that show married Sarah Hyland from Modern Family is still something of a stumper.
That's a mind boggler. When we lived in Nashville, he was one of the head DJs on Lightning 100. Kind of the alternative station, the cool station in town.
Oh.
And so Carly and I have an affinity for him. And then for that reason, among other affinities, last night when Carly was like, who's he marrying? I'm like, Sarah Hyland, the older daughter on Modern Family. And I was just kind of, I was almost waiting for the, how did you know that so fast question. You're like, what's the next subject we can talk about? Those darn kids.
Oh, I keep up on the Modern Family, so that was an easy one for me to answer. Should the topic come up? But holy shit! As usual, somehow got derailed from wrestling talk into Bachelor in Paradise Land. It was all just because I was trying to transition to the topic we're going to talk about at the top of the show and never got to it.
That's great. We're just Tokyo drifting into it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I made reference. It all started with the names and getting name recognition. With Casey Catanzaro is really where that road originally started. And Triple H not giving people first names back, but not real names back. Think Johnny Wrestling's the only one that has now gotten to keep his full name, but he also signed with the WWE after the Triple H regime started here.
Right. This has been really, again, from the sidelines, I admit, for as little as I'm watching, it's been interesting to read about what's going on, to keep up with who's coming back and kind of what their status is in the company. Like you said, what their name is like that for. That's just so weird that that's part of the drama of this whole thing going down, is like not only like who's coming back, but what's he going to be called or she. Also reading like everybody's hot takes on why these are good or bad things. Like whatever happened with Austin Theory, who was Theory and is now Austin Theory, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there he is. Okay, he's got his Austin back. So he's up in the A's of the roster page, so that's nice. Cashing in his money in the bag, spoiler alert, and not doing it successfully. And then of course everyone's like, oh my God. If Vince were still in charge, folks. If Vince were still in charge, the WWE would be being run by a manipulative, predatory 78-year-old creep. So let's just do a before Vince's departure and an after Vince timeline and say, like, you know, whatever you think is wrong about what's going on right now, it could be worse. Vince McMahon could still be in charge.
It is, you know, it was kind of funny. It was something that a lot of people were talking about with the Wilkes-Barre crowd on Raw on Monday. there has been a palpable change in the WWE actually miking their crowds at live events since Triple H took over. And
okay, tell me more. I haven't heard much about this. I want to know more about this.
Wilkes-Barre was pretty quiet. Like, it's been a pretty rocking crowd no matter where they've gone. And it's something that started under Vince and I still kind of like because they're still doing it, is that they're going to some of these smaller venues for the live events. Because I was in tears. It was like 6 months ago, there was a Raw held in Toledo. They said the word Toledo like once during the broadcast and then just said that they were recording from fucking Ohio. It's just like, Jesus Christ, Vince. Like, I know that Toledo is not Chicago. It's not even Cleveland and or Cincinnati, more or less Columbus. But it's just
but the fact that the word Toledo made his banned words list right at the beginning of a broadcast, like he heard it over his headphones at Gorilla, and it's like, we're allowed, who, Jimmy Smith or Adnan Burke or fucking Samoa Joe or whoever's doing commentary for Raw these days, Pat McAfee on his days off from his 12 other jobs. Monday Night Raw is live from Toledo, Ohio, and Vince hears it, God damn it. I don't want to hear that fucking word again. What the fuck is Toledo?
Yeah, but honestly, 6 months later, I don't know if it was a SmackDown or a second Raw, went back to Toledo, and they actually admitted that it was Toledo repeatedly during the show. And it's just like, oh, thank fucking God. Like, that was so... I think it's a good idea to go to the small markets because I think that they've been getting good reactions. Like, people don't want to drive to, like, I always use the comparison, I could drive down to Dayton to go to a show. It's only about $1.15 from my place to get to the arena down there. Mm-hmm. That's still a pain in the ass during a weekday.
Or like, you gotta work the next day.
Yeah, especially if you have to work the next day. Like, it's just tough. And I completely get going to some of these smaller markets because I guarantee you they're the same mindset. They don't want to have to drive $1.50. You know, someone from Dayton doesn't want to drive the... Will there be some people that make that drive? Sure. The majority of fans, though, they're going to be wherever the location of the event is, you know?
Oh, for sure. And, like, depending on the size of the market... Like any, I mean, almost any percentage of any market is worth pulling, right? So, like, you come to Chicago, where there are 3 million people, or well, I think that's the number, and you run Allstate Arena, and you get 15,000. So that's, oh God, hold on, 3 million, 300,000 is 10%. So 30,000 is 1%. So you're getting one half of 1%, and there are probably people coming in from nearby. Right.
Oh,
but that's yeah. But pulling half of 1% in Chicago is fantastic. You go to Sioux City, Iowa, which they do mostly for house shows, mostly during like. It's funny they come to Northwestern Iowa during the shittiest weather. Like they've actually done a matinee show on Super Bowl Sunday about 12 years ago, and I went. but let me see, Sioux City, Iowa. Where's the Wikipedia entry? Because if there are 40,000 people in Sioux City, I'd be shocked. Hold on a second.
No.
Oh, shit. It's way bigger than I thought it was. Sioux City is 90,000 people.
But still, your point stands, though, that if
so
you're...
Their arena, their Tyson Event Center. Hold on one second. Not to cut you off, but I want to look up Tyson. Yes, named after the disgusting chicken just compressed into small patties. Tyson. I'm curious how many the Tyson Event Center... Okay. At full capacity, holds 10,000. I guarantee you they cut it in half for house shows, so it's 5,000. So 5,000, yeah, so let's say that they had 100,000 people in their market. Well, 10,000 is 10%, 5,000 is 5%, that's amazing. They can pull 5% of their of that market and sell out a 5,000 seat arena and not burn out Chicago by coming too many times and not burn out LA by coming too many times. So yeah, absolutely. I'm with you, man. Drop in these shitty little markets and get your 5,000 people and reward them once a year. Don't burn out the other markets, but then don't be ashamed of it. Like, you're here to entertain these people. Like, I went to WWE house shows in Des Moines, Iowa, when 1,900 people showed up, right? And it's like, this is a market that 4 years earlier was sold out for Hulk Hogan versus the Big Boss Man on Saturday night's main event. But they came back because they knew there were some loyal people that they could squeeze some money out of, like me and my dad. And then, like... And then actually it's interesting because they always come back. Now Des Moines is like a once a year Monday Night Raw market. And again, it's always a shitty time of year. You know, it's funny, last year, and I'm pretty sure they're going to do it this year, we get the Monday Night Raw that gets taped. So like it's so close to Christmas that they're when they're off the road at Christmas, guess what? Monday Night Raw is taped from Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah, and I guess the unfortunate flip side was Wilkes-Barre this week. That crowd was just it was not into it like they have been recently, and it really did. It is one of those things too where I watched. And I do think the same things happened since the WWE started to do the overseas stuff again recently. And it was really easy to watch the Saudi show, the Crown Jewel, and see the difference between the reactions in that crowd and the ones in Wilkes-Barre. Like, I get that it's a bigger venue, so you're going to just by proxy have more sound. Yeah, Wilkes-Barre just seemed dead. Of course, it didn't really help them out that they got the best segment first on the show, and then you had to recover from that.
For the next, 2 hours and 40 minutes?
The next 2 hours and 15 minutes since that lasted, 45 minutes. Between
shows what I know because of what I'm watching and not watching. They had a 45-minute opening segment.
It was like a 15-minute talking segment, then like a two-break match.
Oh,
it was a six-man match because the Usos are coming up and are ready to beat the New Day's length of title reign for the tag team championships. And Friday is the actual time of the match, so them and New Day got a solid 15. And, of course, Matt Riddle came out to help even the sides for the New Day. And we ended up with a six-man match. And, that's one way to chew up TV time, and quickly. It's also a good way to burn out a crowd, too. So...
Well, we'll see if anybody in production sees that as a cue to maybe not have 3:15. Well, a 15-minute segment. No, let's see. I'm looking at how long the match is. 20-minute match. Every time I come on here, I say the same thing. But guys, wrestling matches. Every single wrestling match doesn't have to be 20 minutes. Especially because when every single wrestling match is 20 minutes, then none of them seem any more important than the other ones.
Triple H has done an okay job at bringing in the enhancement talent matches on a more regular basis. Like, he did that in NXT on the regular. And he's kind of done that for some of his big men to keep them apart a little bit longer. Do I want to see Omos smash four guys again? Not really. Is it better than him and Braun Strowman having another confrontation? Yeah, 100%. Like, we don't need to see that often.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, as I'm reading through the Raw results and I'm seeing things like Cedric Alexander gets beat in 2 minutes. No judgment. Elias gets beaten 3 minutes. That's a topic for another segment. Shelton Benjamin gets beaten 240. That's too bad, but I mean, he's also probably 40 years old.
Yeah, he's closer our age than most. I was going to say most of their roster, but that would also be a lie since most of the roster is close to our age.
Interesting. But then for every 2 minute match, it's sandwiched by some ungodly, ridiculous long, like I'm looking at prowrestling.net's rundown, and it's paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of what's happening that's not a wrestling match. And I don't know. I was not the first and will not be the last person to say this, but these 3 hour Raws are just an absolute drag. I can't believe they've sustained it. You know what? Good for them because they got their money for it. What the hell? If somebody paid me that much money to put on 3 hours of television every week, I'd find a way to do it too.
Yeah, it's. This was definitely one that you can paper over it as much as you want to, but they also tend to go to the extended matches in circumstances like this, where a main part of the roster went over on this giant overseas tour. And yeah. You can tell they're just like, hey guys, we need to use all the backup players today. And they empty the bench, and more of them get TV time than they normally would.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, you mean we didn't send Cedric? Okay, here we go.
What? You mean Shelton Benjamin wasn't sent over to Saudi Arabia? Why not? Like, he was in his prime when Stunt Granny started.
Hell yeah. Got that right, he was. Oh, man. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead in things, but... Folks, we talked about this. Kevin and I talked about this offline. So funny that as we're talking today, as we're recording this, November 8th, 2022, about Triple H taking over, wielding all this power in WWE, it made me think, God, I submitted a guest article for the Pro Wrestling Torch back in 2000 on the topic of Triple H and him being in power. And how he maybe had too much power. 22 years ago, we were talking about this. And here's my favorite part of the whole thing. I Googled, because I can never remember the exact website, but I Googled Internet Wayback Machine. And I think the actual URL is web.archive.org, but I can never remember those in that exact order. So I was Google Internet Wayback Machine, and the site came up, and I typed in, you can search old website, like, snapshots have been taken of many, 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 many websites over many, many, many years. You can go to this site and you can search for a site. So in their search bar, I typed in pwtorch.com, and it came up with all these snapshots from all the way back to like 1999 or 2000 or whatever it was. And on a complete fucking miraculous whim, I clicked on the snapshot from a particular timestamp in October of 2000. And within three clicks, I found the guest editorial that I wrote, submitted and posted October 26th of 2000, Torch guest editorial by Eric Nelson, titled, How Much Power Does Triple H Wield? 22 years ago, we were talking about this. And I'm just curious now. I'm going to read this. Some of it verbatim, and then I'm going to skim or whatever. But I wrote, a string of events has recently jarred my memory and got me thinking. Let's start from the beginning, which strangely relates to the subject at hand. That doesn't mean anything. Oh, wait, no. WCW is on the selling block right now because it is the branch of a huge conglomerate that is about to end the year $80 million in the red. Wow, it was like I was doing research back then. One of the big reasons WCW lost so much money was its inept, self-serving booking. By the way, I was 19 when I wrote this. Like, I knew fuck all about business. One of the bookers during that one-year period was clubhouse lawyer and Universal lazy man, Kevin Nash. Somebody else who should probably just kick my fucking ass if he ever meets me. As booker, he put himself over at the expense of 59 other wrestlers in one battle royal, at the expense of Goldberg's push, and in some way at the expense of the company's future. So what I was doing was saying, when a wrestler has too much power, shit goes south. And I equated that to Triple H. And I mentioned, who else did I mention? Hulk Hogan and his "that doesn't work for me, brother," and Dusty Rhodes and the Dusty finishes of blah, blah, blah. And I said, here's what I said at the end. Let's just hope that in 15 years we're not mentioning Triple H's name in the same breath as these guys. 22 years later, he's in charge of the fucking company.
Yeah, I mean, the upside is that he's not booking himself.
Right, yes, there is that, yes. He did enough of that over the years that he's obviously old and has physical maladies and constraints, but...
Yeah.
God, that's hilarious. I emailed it to you, Kevin, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm looking at it, and I was laughing that it was almost exactly 22 years ago that got posted.
That's so great.
Just marginally over that. And, yeah, it's – honestly, I didn't realize that the whole Triple H having too much power – predated Stunt Granny by that length of time, I suppose.
I know. It's crazy.
Because it felt like that was a main source of consternation when the site started, too. So that time period was a long time period that it was Triple H is bad. But Triple H has turned into, good booking wrestling dad sometime between then and now, and it's kind of been a while since it's at least been the TV era of NXT that I feel like people have really liked.
It took that. Like, now he's a folk hero, right?
Yeah.
Like, before he was just super villain, which is great because then he got to play into it on his TV character. Like, anything, I think about this a lot, and again, now this is 8 years ago. But, you know, the Daniel Bryan not best for business thing. It's just totally them creating a storyline where they know that this guy, Daniel Bryan, is a huge fan favorite and an underdog and an indie guy and an internet guy. And Triple H is in a position where he can play into this character of, I've been in charge for a long time and I married the boss's daughter. And I've probably said in a casual interview that was picked up somewhere that something wasn't good for business. And I'm just going to take that line and run with it, make a whole storyline out of it. And they turn it into the greatest WrestleMania moment of the last 10 years. And then the guy goes down with injuries and concussions and fucks everybody out of a feel good end of a career. But 2008 into 2009, we're supposed to be excited that he's sneaking into Randy Orton's house and throwing him through a bay window, and we're not, right?
Yeah.
And he's in and out of being DX, and he's whatever. And then he takes over NXT, and now he's this big folk hero, and now he can do no wrong. And again, he is also, we're comparing him to Vince McMahon as we know him today. And I'm sorry, as a 42-year-old man, I'm turning into the harder to separate the art from the artist guy. Like, for as much as I enjoyed WWE and WWF for as many decades as I did, and it doesn't have a stink on it for me, but like, I don't want Vince McMahon running my wrestling company anymore, knowing what we know about him now. So it's like, is it the devil you know versus the devil you don't? Is it the folk hero Triple H booker of NXT? Is it the guy who's just been around for so goddamn long and been a part of so much of this that, like, you can't help but like him anymore? Or is he just really that good at his job? And it could be that he's just really that good at his job.
I think we find, like, it's one of those ones that there's still a lot of time to tell how it's going to play out. Because I want to say that Chris was talking about him needing at least 6 months to really put his fingerprints all over the roster. He's definitely doing it by bringing people, bringing this guy and that woman and other people back that Vince let go of, because you could tell that they were a little light on the roster at some juncture. Did they need to get rid of people? For the most part, yeah. Like, they had too many people for even the amount of airtime that the WWE produces for all of their corporate overlords. But they also went from having too many to, like, hey, guys, you've cut, like, three quarters of your roster. Like, maybe you went a little too far here? And yeah. And Triple H kind of feeling, it doesn't feel like he's been on a complete spending spree, but bringing back spot people is going to help them more than it's not going to. Are they going to be featured on TV every week? Doubtful. You kind of get tired of certain matchups, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think that, no, you make a great point. I think they, to fill the time that they fill, to fill the, you know, their touring schedule that they have, to keep people from getting burnout. I mean, God, I'm trying to think. Dusty and I used to joke about this. Like, I think it was Hacksaw Jim Duggan we used to joke about was on Superstars every single week. Oh. And it's like, it's some, you know, God love the guy, of course. But at some point, you don't tune in to Superstars to watch Hacksaw Jim Duggan that week. So, yeah, no, that's and I think that there's also a little bit of that. Like, you know, we got ourselves to a point, we worked ourselves into a lather about Vince McMahon as a person that we just didn't like and a booker that we just didn't like even before any of the scandal stuff. And so it got to a point where anything he did was wrong. And so what we're seeing now looks like Triple H righting the wrongs of the devil himself, Vince McMahon. And that's fine too. Again, like all things considered, all factors, like, turns out Vince isn't the greatest guy. He's also a character that we've grown to hate. He's also a corporate businessman. He's also done things like stretch our wrestling shows too thin. He's also done things like his production people have pumped crowd noise in where it doesn't belong. He's edited footage that we don't agree with. He's taken Ric Flair out of the open. He's put Ric Flair back in the open. He's taken Ric Flair out of the open. You know, it's like, I don't know. Right. I don't know. Is Triple H in the right place, right time? Oh, yeah, apparently he has been for 20 years.
yeah, that guy has really found himself in some good positions, especially one where, evidently, you know, the new CEO's like, yeah, Vince needs to go. Like, this has gotten out of control. Like, that to me is the biggest one in this whole thing. Vince McMahon brings in Nick Khan, and it's just like, ha-ha, like, I've got the upper hand now. And Nick's like, man, this product is, it just, it definitely feels more modern with Triple H in charge. Like, it could be just that veneer that helps. Just because, I mean, you really could tell that Vince was still booking, like, from a playbook 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that this is for somebody who's been around as long as Triple H has, he's still got a fresh perspective and a fresh approach to creating a wrestling product. You know, I think that's another cool thing. Like, in a way, like, yeah, he's been a wrestler for, I don't know, I can't remember when he started, early 90s on the Indies, right? In the Northeast. I mean, he's been around for 30 years.
Yeah, a long time.
He's a fan. Like, I think you can clearly tell that he's a fan of professional wrestling, too. And so, like, you know, again, trying to, you know, What resonates with nerds like us? Like, okay, cool. A fan is in charge of the biggest company. So, I don't know. This is when this all comes out in the wash, or if somebody made a pros and cons list at the end of the year, or whatever it looks like. Like, the good's going to outweigh the bad. This is a good thing. Whether the factor is real names, fake names, first names, last names, or better production, or the right number of people who are there, or didn't manipulate women into having to spend $12 million of hush money and making it all go away. all things said, this is all going to come out in the wash as a positive. Is it going to turn Eric Nelson into a fan again? I literally never, if you would ask me 22 years ago if I would ever stop watching wrestling, I would tell you you're out of your fucking mind, but I would also tell you I would never have a wife and two kids. So the fact that wrestling and I are on a break right now is super weird. But who knows? Maybe he'll come up. Maybe the product will evolve in a way where I'm like, I can't possibly miss this for 5 hours a week televised of a main product and a secondary product and a premium live event every 3 weeks. And then my wife is like, you're out of your fucking mind. I'm watching it right now. Give me YouTube clips of the Bloodline with Sami Zayn any day of the week, and I will stay. I stayed up till 11 o'clock the other night, which is late for me. I can't imagine how you're up in Eastern time finishing recording with me right now. I watched two versions of the Usos and Sami Zayn doing the not feeling very Usy thing. Yes. I watched two clips of it because the time, one of them was like 2 minutes and 20 seconds and one of them was 3 minutes and 1 second. And they were the exact same fucking thing, except one just had a little bit more at the beginning, and I was so happy to watch them both. Like, it didn't – I'm like, I don't care that I just watched the same thing twice. It's so – it's awesome. I don't know that that's going to turn me into a seven-hour-a-week WWE NXT fan. But
I think they kind of count on that kind of fan, you know what I mean? It was definitely something that I haven't done it as much recently. Just what YouTube and a show, I can still easily do this podcast. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, even with Triple H in charge, like, they put out enough content on there to stay somewhat in the know without, like you said, spending the amount of time that I do watching the whole thing. Yeah, it's easy to at least keep tabs on it. And just counting by, or just looking at the viewer counts and the likes on those videos, like, they do great. You know, they obviously consider that a revenue stream, or else they wouldn't be pushing that much stuff on YouTube.
I'm going to, without letting too many cats out of too many bags. This might be one of the last things I say on the topic. So I teach classes for the University of Iowa. I teach classes on digital strategic communication, digital analytics. And in teaching, I have invited a number of people to speak to my students who are in professions or adjacent professions, because I can't be the only person with a point of view on these topics. And two people who I've invited and have spoken to my classes in the past work for WWE, and one of them is specifically in analytics, and it's across media, it's not just digital. And in talking to this person in my class, she has said that every single piece of data from every medium feeds into every other single piece of medium data, or feeds into every other piece of content in every medium. And let me rephrase that a little bit. What they do on TV feeds into social, but what they do on social feeds into TV. And what they do on specific YouTube clips might inform a contest that they do, or it might inform a specific segment on TV, or, you know, a specific interview they do on The Bump or whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
They have people who are so ingrained. Like, I cannot imagine how that company ran back in 1985 when all you could go by was, you know, who came to Madison Square Garden. Like, now they have so much content spread across so much media and so many data points coming in, but they have an army of people who swarm around that. And they're like, this segment with Elias caused a quarter of a point uptick in ratings on TV, and so he needs to be the next interview on The Bump because people are paying attention to him. And when he says this thing about Riddle, then we're gonna put this thing about Riddle on YouTube, and it just feeds. It's a monster of a product, and you know. So Wilkes-Barre was quiet. And you know what? Wilkes-Barre being quiet might actually turn into something.
Oh.
Like, somebody there is going to recognize that and do something about it. Who knows what? But I think the product is much improved. I think, you know, it also has to start at the top, but also, like, knowing the people who I know at the very limited level to which I know them, like, I want to make sure that there is at least some recognition for the fact that this is a huge machine full of people who see data, internalize it, analyze it, spit it out as reports. That, like, the stuff that they do on YouTube today is what's going to turn into the TV format next Monday. Guaranteed. 100% in some fashion.
No. Yeah. I like I said, it's easy to watch YouTube and do a podcast about the WWE, at least currently. I don't think you would pull that off with AEW. Like,
you know, I'll be honest with you, dude. Again, this maybe just speaks to the size of the machine. As much as I'm online and as much as I'm on different social media channels, I think that the ratio of WWE to AEW stuff I see on social, it might just be my algorithm, but I'm telling you, it's like 90-10. Like, I rarely see any AEW presence on social media, and I'm like, guys, if it's just my algorithm, then it's just my algorithm. But if it's their lack of content creation for social media, they have completely missed the mark. Completely missed it. They are not following their audience. You've got to be where your audience is if you're going to do this stuff today. And if you don't, then your cokehead boss is just flushing money down the toilet. The urinal that he's probably blowing rails off of. Am I allowed to say stuff like that?
Sure. I mean, I'm still not really concerned, honestly. And it's one of those ones that AEW does have YouTube content. But I'm, even with them, I'm like, hey guys, I'm watching 3 hours of your TV product. I don't want to take in another, like, I think it's at least 2 hours of YouTube wrestling content.
Is it because it's a show?
Yeah, it's just that's where I think the Big Show is one of the announcers on, I started making fun of all the names because they all sound like architecture terms.
Okay.
Because the one's AEW, because I think one's just Dark and the one's Elevation. So I started to make jokes because, you know, with the whole Elevation thing. It's just like, I think that those programs, though, are like, Jeremy said the one is almost 2 hours most of the time. And it's nothing but wrestling. Like, there are no skits in it. And it's just like, guys, I and it kind of goes a little bit to your point. As much as I have enjoyed some of the good wrestling, there is some time where it's just like, guys, I'm a little burnt out here. Like, everyone is so good at wrestling now. It's like, I can see this level of match it almost any time. So I can't imagine tuning into AEW shows online for even more wrestling. And also knowing, though, that wrestling probably, like, they're legitimately going to be doing, like, the younger people who need in-ring time and need training on these shows. And that's why they're not making it to TV. Yeah, are there going to be some of the better people winning those matches? Sure. For the most part, though, guys, 3 hours is a lot, and I still even know that, like, being the Elite, I know that you're a huge Young Bucks fan, but, you know, that's something that, even though it's only, like, 20 minutes or so long, I haven't watched that in forever, and the fact that those chuckleheads are still suspended is hilarious. But of course, yeah, going and possibly kicking down somebody's door to confront them, not very bossly of you. So I can understand.
There are legal ramifications for that if you're not careful. Oh, not in the good old boy pro wrestling industry, though. Well, I will watch, like I said, I'll watch the same clip I'll watch the same 3-minute clip twice in a row and get more enjoyment out of it than even the thought of watching a 2-hour wrestling show on YouTube. Like, you also have to, you have to know the medium and tailor your message to it. Like, if they had anything compelling on their main shows that they could turn into a 3-minute clip, I might have more product awareness over AEW. Don't use it to show me a whole fucking show. Like, and sorry, like, I didn't watch NWA Power either, right? Like, I don't go to YouTube to watch. I know some people do. And I'm a focus group of one. I don't go to YouTube to watch 1 and 2 hour TV shows. But if you can sneak a couple clips under my nose that I might catch and be like, oh, cool, Sting did this. Great. Now you've got my attention for a hot minute. Like, I'm so pumped about what the Bloodline with Sami Zayn is doing right now that if I caught it on TV, I'd watch it. If you tried to shove a whole 2-hour TV show under my nose, I would run for the hills.
No way. Yeah. And that, to me, is what AEW's online engagement is. That's where the problem is. Because even being the Elite, like you said, like, there's a difference between a 20-minute viewing and 3 minutes.
Yeah. Well, even, like, back to Zack Ryder. Long Island Story, dude, those were great. Being the Elite was great. Like, I literally have never watched one, and I had so many people, our buddy Dan Keister included, who was like, just watch one. And I should have, because I think they were probably entertaining at one point. Like, I don't confuse success for things like that with the possibility of success of a 2-hour professional wrestling show on a website that was made for people to watch goofy clips. That would be my recommendation to the leadership there. Like, you got to tailor your message for the medium if you want attention. You got to do this right. It's, doing it isn't doing it right. Doing it right is doing it right.
Yeah. Got to do things on the right foot here. I guess it is getting pretty late here on EST time. Anything else to get off your chest before we get out of Dodge here?
Oh, off my chest! Goodness gracious! I don't know. I was gonna make a plea to wrestling to give me something to watch, but it could be on me too. You know what? Actually, Triple H, find me a babysitter. Maybe I'll watch your show. I'll send my wife out to have fun with her girlfriends, and I'll watch wrestling for 3 hours. No, nothing I can think of to get off my chest. I want to be compelled to watch again. I think Ruthie, actually, our 4-year-old, I think she actually knows what wrestling is, despite me not having it on in the house. Like, I think she actually saw me skimming Instagram and saw a couple wrestlers and asked me, is that wrestling? I'm like, oh my God, I can't protect her from it. I might as well bring her into this world. So, man, I just, if you're doing these at the twice a week pace, then I'll be on for 900 in about a year.
Yep.
Keep the old couch warm down here. But if I tell you what, if I dig up any more gems, man, any more old PW Torch guest editorials, I'll make sure to send them your way. Hey, everybody have a happy Thanksgiving. Think about this. 35 years ago was the first Survivor Series. Memorable. Andre the Giant gets a win over Hulk Hogan in an elimination match, of course. 30 years ago, kind of an oddball show. 92 was weird. Ultimate Maniacs kind of exploded. Mr. Perfect comes back, wrestles Ric Flair and Razor Ramon. 25 years ago, Montreal Screwjob. And then you start getting into 2002 and you're like, what the fuck happened that year? I bet you if I said names like Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle and Edge and Rey Mysterio and the Guerreros, I'd be close. Then it's 2007 and I'm like, okay, now you're getting into Heidenreich territory. Oh. I don't really remember what happened. And then the deeper into it you get, it's like, oh my God, I couldn't tell you a thing that happened in any of these Survivor Series. So everybody can also unofficially offline, not not like I'm contributing anything anywhere, but join me in some Survivor Series nostalgia. Let's all dig into the Peacock and find some old Survivor Series and enjoy those. Let me date myself a little bit more and make 35-year-old references instead of 35-minute-old references. And that's where I stand right now. Give me Peacock and nostalgia, and I'll be a happy camper.
Oh, fair enough. What is it, Eric D. Nelson? Do you really want that out there?
Keep that one to yourself. And Steve and Jordan. And other people who I'll reference from 800 years ago.
At DeFrango 11. Oh, you know what? Belltime beer for the show. Your boy has done some traveling this year. The wife did some separate traveling on her own. This was one that she picked up for me on her family vacation. Country Boy Brewing Passion Fruit Cider. Hey, I am available for all pretty much types of beer, whatever they happen to be, cider, regular beer, or otherwise. I have an interest. So Country Boy Brewing, I believe it's Lexington, Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken, is the location to be able to find this. Georgetown, Kentucky. So, yeah, if you happen to find yourself down in the Bluegrass State, find some Country Boy Brewing. They're pretty tasty. So, that is the Belltime beer suggestion from @DeFrang11. The brand is @StuntGranny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.